Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we pay tribute to Meatloaf.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Okay, more sad news from the world of rock and roll. The singer Meatloaf died recently at age 74. Meatloaf, born Marvin Lee Adey. And of course, I think for a lot of people who grew up when we did, he was a, I don't even mean this as a joke, a larger than life figure. He really was, both, you know, and not just physically, right? Like he was a, personality wise and sales wise and all of that. He was a really big deal for a period of time. And then, but I think even for people who, you know, didn't grow up in that same era, who, you know, are of other generations, I think he still continued to hold a lot of appeal. I think his music has endured. His music he did with Jim Steinman especially has really endured to the point where, you know, there were a lot of tributes to him on his passing because of that that connection I think a lot of people made to him. And let's introduce ourselves real quickly here. The show is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I think a big part of it, Patrick, I'll give you a chance to talk here in a minute, but I think a big part of it was the, you know, the music, the big hits were written by Jim Steinman, and I think they had a certain connection to the, like sort of, especially like young people and teen angst and sort of like, you know, going through various, you know, changes in your own self. But it was the passion that he put into it too, that I think really drove it home. Right.
Yeah, totally agree, Jim. And, who knew that, Bob Paulson from Fight Club actually had a music career before he appeared in that film? No, of course I'm kidding. And you're right. You know, that Bat Outta Hell creation was a really special thing that came together in you know, an unusual way. They had worked on it for years. They had had the concept. Meatloaf had appeared in musicals, especially Hair and Rocky Horror Picture Show. So he had a sense of that dramatic, as you said, larger than life song that, and the way you can take an emotion and amplify it to make it seem like it's the whole world, you know, coming down to that one moment. And then, you know, they had the songs, they shopped around, and Todd Rundgren got involved and played guitar. A lot of his band members from Utopia played on the record as well, and it was picked up by a label called Cleveland International after many record labels passed on it and became a worldwide smash. I mean, you know, it was part of, at least in the time when I was growing up, you know, in the late 70s and 80s and just learning about music, it was one of those ones you checked off first on your Columbia Record House form before you taped your penny in and sent it in for your 12 albums. It was amazing. It really was. And some of the things they did with it, too, with the vocals, the female vocals that came in, really told a story. And Phil Rizzuto, right, on the radio.
That's right.
Really, you know, making a you know, a teenage makeout session in a car, right. You know, into something.
Pretty brilliant. Yeah. Pretty brilliant. Right?
Amazing analogy. Yeah. And there were several other versions, follow-ups on Bat Out of Hell, too. I think they got up to at least number three at one point. But yeah, he had that impact, you know, all across the board. And one thing I'll say, too, is that I saw Meatloaf in 2003 at Wolf Trap over here in Vienna. And he was, you know, later on in his life, as he got a little older, he struggled with some health problems. He was diagnosed with a couple different things, and he continued to keep a rigorous schedule. But I remember very clearly at that show, his voice obviously didn't have the power, you know, that it did when he was a younger man. But
right.
It took so much physical effort, you know, for him to hit these notes and to sing these songs the way he did. It really struck you, you know, how much effort went into doing that originally, you know. And just to get, you know, a live version was taking all he had. I remember he was doubled over at one point, just giving it all he had to try to reach those notes. And at one point, he even slipped down the stairs. He was singing so hard, those little side stairs at Wolf Trap on the stage. Luckily, he was okay. But yeah, it just really drove home to you how intense he was as a vocalist.
You mentioned Rocky Horror Picture Show. I love his part in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's just sort of perfect for it. You know, the commentary on sort of, at that point, like the aging rocker kind of thing, right? But, you know, but he played it so perfectly. He obviously knew what he was doing. Love that. He was in something like 65 movies or something. I mean, I know, you know, we're talking about his musical, you know, legacy, but still he went on to become quite a successful actor.
He really did. I'll tell you one thing that I had sort of forgotten about, but came up when I was reading about his tributes and his life. Spice World, 1997, is a pretty clever movie, folks. If you haven't seen it, it's kind of a throwaway, and it's lighthearted entertainment, but it's really funny in many ways. And Meatloaf's I believe he drives their tour bus in that movie. So get out Spice World if it's streaming somewhere and look at it. It's a fun one. And of course, he's great in Fight Club as well. And supposedly,
wonderful.
Yeah, helped David Fincher edit that movie, if you believe, you know, the way that was put together. But yeah, a lot of different stuff. Did some funny skits, appeared on Saturday Night Live a few times as well.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of neat too. I also discovered something really unusual, reading about after his passing. He was very, very popular in the UK. I think as popular as he was over here in the States, he actually was even more popular in the UK and toured over there a lot. And apparently he, at one point, I guess it was in the 2000s or something, he came to like the town of Hartlepool in England, and he was going to buy a house there at one point, but he supported the Hartlepool United FC, which is a team down in the lower divisions of English football. So that was kind of Meatloaf's team, and I saw they put out a big tribute to him as one of their famous, most famous supporters. So that was kind of cool.
That is cool. So I'll just say real quickly here, I think I do find it interesting. So I think this all ties into the movie career and everything. So he, as you mentioned, he came up in the like musical theater.
Mm-hmm.
That was his background. He wasn't like a garage band, you know, kind of guy, I don't think, you know, or, you know, that kind of thing. Right. So he always, I think, viewed the music that he was doing very like professionally, like this is a job I'm going to do. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, he obviously had a certain vision of what he wanted to put out there, but he was a showman, you know, and I don't think and there's nothing wrong with that. Right. I think he understood what works with audiences and, you know, I mean, at the same time, though, he was an unconventional star. I mean, he's not the kind of guy that, you know, a talent agency would go out and say, this is going to be the next big rock star. Right. But so there is something to that, like that belief in what you're doing and that confidence, I think, that he had that came through to the audience that people connected with. And that part, it was true. So it's like, on one hand, it's a really interesting mix because on one hand, it's sort of like what we like, you know, sort of indie guys would be like, oh, that's, you know, theatrics, that's not real, you know, the heart of rock and roll kind of musicianship. But at the same time, even though there's that aspect to it, it really is, though, the heart of the performance that he did that I think was the true connection. And so I you know, you do have to give him credit, big credit, I think, for taking these songs that, you know, are not like, you know, they're not Eddie Cochran, right? It's not like, you know, they're sort of these big, you know, kind of bombastic songs, but really making them relatable to people, putting a certain kind of truth into it, I guess is what I would say. And then I guess that's what they say you need to do as an actor, right? You need to find the truth in that character that you're playing. And he did that musically as well.
I think that's really well said, Jim. You really hit something there. And just to emphasize, you know, what you're saying about his unconventional stardom yet passion. I mean, when he was in Hair in the early 70s, you know, he was so impressive in that performance that he actually got a deal to cut an album under the Motown umbrella. You know, he put out an album called Stoney and Meatloaf on the Rare Earth label, which was an offshoot of Motown. But yeah, they saw something in him, you know, and that's as unconventional probably as you can, you know, think of. Well, Meatloaf on Motown. But, you know, that kind of psychedelic soul, he could pull that off. He really could.
And then, he did have other hit songs. I remember some big hit songs in the 80s on the radio, you know, after the Bat Out of Hell stuff. So, you know, he had a very respectable career. And the Bat Out of Hell album, by the way, sold something like 14 million copies. So
yeah, that did okay. It's way up there. Yeah, it's got to be up there still in the top 25 sellers of all time, I would think. Pretty amazing.
This was one last point I want to make. I also think the timing for him was just right in the sense that at that point of time, Bat Out of Hell came out. That you were like 20 years into rock and roll, right? You had almost a moment there. There was like a moment there where people were almost kind of commenting on the art, on the form itself in a way. Do you know what I mean? It was almost kind of meta in the way that like this stuff was put together, that rock and roll was no longer just, like I said, this organic thing, but it was theater, and that you had 20 years of history now that you could look back on and build on.
Yep.
And comment on, like I was saying, right? And I think there's a lot. So I think there's a lot more sort of depth in that music in that way if you look for it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, you know, he and a couple other people did come along just at the right time and took advantage of that as well by working hard and putting that together. So a career unlikely. We're very unlikely to see a career like this ever again, just because of, like you said, the circumstances, his personality and all that. So, yeah, a once in a lifetime kind of character for sure.
Well, rest in power, Meatloaf.
Yep. Rest in power, Meat.
And yes, or as the New York Times would always call him, Mr. Loaf.
Mr. Loaf. Yeah, and I love that. I mean, he had a kind of a turbulent childhood. His dad had a lot of demons, but I guess he got his name. His dad saw him for the first time, and he said he was like as red as 12 pounds of ground chuck roast or something like that. So he was always destined to be called Meatloaf.
Okay. If anyone would like to comment at all on the music of Meat Loaf, you can call and leave a message,
612-440-1984.
Or write us an email, rock@suburbspod.com, or hit us up on the social medias of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram @suburbspod. All right, let's get out of here. It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
All right, we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
And I would do anything for love. I'd run right into hell and back. I would do anything for love. I'll never lie to you, and that's a fact. But I'll never forget the way you feel right now. I would do anything for love, but I won't do that. No, I won't do that. Anything for love. Oh, I would do anything for love. I would do anything for love, but I won't.
His name is Robert Paulson.
Come on, guys.
His
please,
name
stop it.
Is Robert Paulson. His name is Robert Paulson. His name
Shut
is
up.
Robert Paulson.
This is all over with.